Good morning on some day in November in 2013.
This is to the 19th.
Brian Madden.com podcast. Thank you.
That was a high energy, low reward intro right there.
Well, so I'm working off my phone, and I'm on an Android, as you know, temporarily.
Are you not in the office?
So the voice you hear is Gabe from Omaha. Jack is here too.
Hi. Are you in the office?
I am. Yeah.
And you're still working on your phone.
Well, okay. So many stories come in together. So first of all, the underground portion of the Muni was closed today. So due to an incident that apparently happened some point between Jack and me leaving to get to the office. So that was a full hour. And then I forgot what else I had. Something with my phone. Oh yeah. Well, then there's the Wi-Fi issue. Like, you know, trying to get my laptop on the Wi-Fi in the office. And then the phone, though, is Android, which I'm ready to – I don't know. It's not working for me. The Samsung Galaxy S4, it just is so slow with everything. So I made a mistake, I think, leaving the iPhone, and I'm trying to see if our company has any upgrades slots left so I can just go back to an iPhone, because this was – despite the fact that it has a huge screen, you know, now that iOS 7 has backup or has background notifications, I feel like that's the big thing that was missing before. I still don't like the keyboard, but I realized
that was your biggest issue, right? Was the fact that you just can't type on an iPhone keyboard?
Yeah, so I had two issues: the background updates and the I can't type on it. So I went to Android because of that, and I can use a swipe keyboard. So now we've got background updates in iOS 7, so that's cool. It's funny though, the swipe keyboard, I am better at that than I am typing the old way on like a chiclet keyboard. But I still don't love typing on this thing. And so I was realizing also, if I just pay, you know, even if I had to pay full price to upgrade the phone because I'm out of contract cycle, I waste so much money on other dumb things in my life that I'm going to use once or twice. And this phone, I probably use it 2 hours a day every single day. So I'm just going for it.
I would think that if you ended up paying full price for an iPhone, then you probably have an S4 that you can, you know, sell somewhere as well to recoup that.
Yeah, I'm hoping. So our help desk guy was talking about how much he loved his S4 and a little piece of him dies every time he has to use his S3. So I don't know what happened to that, but I'll be like, you want Verizon? Because, bro, you find me a little upgrade, and I bet you an S4 finds its way into your mailbox.
Nice. Well, you know, welcome back. This is it the Amish that let the kids go out for a while and then come back in? I feel like that's what we let you do. We let you out of the iOS world. And,
hey,
yeah.
Justin, can you move Gabe's window above the words so it's not blocking it? Do you think can you see our screen in here? There. Yeah. This is Justin is like both now the voice of move down a little bit.
Hopefully people can hear Justin.
No. Left. Now down. Click.
So
drag.
if you're listening right now.
Hey, Gabe, read me.
This is good radio right here.
Gabe, Brian, it's right here.
Hey, Jack, read me this. Read me this first comment. All right, thanks.
Biff says, do you think MDM ends up a function of larger systems and client lifecycle vendors, IBM, Landesk, Altiris, etc., or will customers continue to buy point player solutions for MDM, AirWatch, Mobile Iron? Question.
I wonder who Biff is. yeah, hey, actually, that was on the list. Did one of you guys type this? Did Jack, you're trying to take over our world, and so you... So look, here's the story.
No, you created the list.
Here's the story. Before we had – so MDM was just for mobile device management, and we defined mobile devices as those with a mobile-like OS, like an iOS or an Android. So you used MDM or MAM or EMM to manage those kinds of devices, and you used more traditional desktop management to manage your Windows laptops. But what's interesting now is now we see Windows 8.1 has this whole workplace join. It's like – because in the old days, you had to basically – join the machine to the domain in order for IT to manage it. But that was like IT like owning the machine, and they sort of controlled it. Like they basically were rooting it. So Windows 8.1 has this workplace join where you can sort of IT can manage some capabilities of the device, like the security and that kind of thing, like when it's, you know, connected to the workplace, but when it's not connected, the user can still have full control. Then there's like workplace spaces and workplace documents and all this kind of stuff.
Workplace folders.
Yeah.
That's
and interesting. Then Apple also in the new Mac OS has made MDM like extensions where actually you can use Profile Manager, the actual MDM protocols to manage Mac OS. And actually back to Windows, Windows 8.1 supports the OMADM, which is Open Management Alliance Desktop Management Interface, which is like an open MDM spec. No?
Oh, OMADM is just device management. It's their agent and protocol for like sending commands from the server back and forth from the device to the server that Windows 8.1 happens to use. And it's what's used as the protocol for communication in Windows Phone 8.
Okay, so the question is now device management.
How do I know this? I actually spent yesterday, Microsoft has a PDF out there like 120 pages long about Windows Phone 8 management, and I know we're on the eve of Windows Phone 8.1, but I spent yesterday reading that entire PDF.
And so do you have an article about that for tomorrow?
For tomorrow, I think I'm actually going to do my review of the Celerox virtualized device, which is another subject that we can get into
I think
later.
A good topic of conversation, a good article title would be, I just read Microsoft's 120-page PDF about managing Windows Phone 8. Here's what you need to know.
I literally called that
the title. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's this question, right? Like the way that we have managed mobile devices is different than the way we manage desktops. And the reason that is because mobile devices, as we've discussed, are much newer. And so you don't have to like own the image of the device in order to guarantee it's secure and, you know, like more restricted on that kind of stuff.
And so, as we know, we do take some trade-offs with that approach. Like when a new mobile OS comes out, iOS 7, and breaks all sorts of stuff, but there's nothing that you can do with MDM to control that. But that's just the way things are now.
Well, but you can use MDM to restrict access, like so you can't actually prevent someone from upgrading to iOS 7, but you can make it so they can't access any of their work stuff if they do.
Yeah, and then as we know from our FUIT series of articles.
Yeah. So the so to Biz's point, so that's a topic of conversation though. Is do you think that we will get to the point where we're managing desktops more like MDM or EMM, where we're not managing the entire desktop? This is sort of this middle ground. And for me, I like this as a concept. The problem is no one's going to Windows 8.1, first of all.
Well, you know who's going to Windows 8.1? The people that BYO their own C, the people that bring in their own laptop. And if it does happen to be a Windows laptop, which I'm assuming if people could choose their own laptop and have it be Windows...
Yeah, I mean, Windows is still outselling Mac. And, I mean, but, you know, actually, that's a good point because the Windows 7, I'm saying no one's going to Windows 8.1. I'm talking about corporations. Well, if they're still on Windows 7 as their machines, they can use old school domain joins and they don't care.
Yeah, they can do that as long as they want. So,
but this feature is for the people that, you know, go to Best Buy, buy a laptop that has Windows 8.1 on it. Now they can use it in the enterprise too.
Do they still have Windows 8.1 like enterprise and home and all that kind of additions, or is there finally just one?
I think there's multiple editions still.
Like, you want to hook this thing into work? It, like, pops up
Bing a paywall.
Bing payments.
Yeah, Xbox payment.
Yeah. You have to first buy Xbox bucks.
Right. With your Xbox Live subscription, you now have the ability to pay for enterprise access, too.
Yeah, and you get one Xbox buck for $1.27. And then they also multiply by 1.27 the prices of everything just to make it more confusing.
Well, it's all based on the euro, yeah. So it's 1 euro, $1.27, 84 pence.
So does this mean that BYOC is that's our answer to it?
For what?
Like just in general, someone brings in their own – just bring your own computer, manage – interfacing with people's personal computers in general.
Well, you know, so it'll be interesting because I've always thought
Bitcoin.
The way to deal with BYOC is to assume the worst. And so for me, BYOC is you put what you give web apps to it that you can. You give like apps via Citrix or whatever for remote Windows apps. And if you want like a managed Windows environment on there, you use like Mocha 5 or something like that. So I wonder if a user comes in with a Windows 8.1 BYOC type client that they have gone just brutal on, you know, and they've got crapware, spyware, junk. It's like fully crapified. That's an experiment. Like, can you have an 8.1 fully crapified laptop and still use all these new, you know, partial domain join type technologies?
Because a Windows 8.1 laptop can probably get a lot more crapified than the most crapified Android or iOS device.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To clear it before, there's three editions of Windows 8. There's the Windows 8, like, no special moniker that, like, that's what you buy on laptops and that.
This is 8.1,
you mean? Best Buy. Well, 8.1, whatever. And then there's the Pro version that's for the prosumers, and then the Enterprise one for enterprises. So there are three, inexplicably. I could see
who
two.
The F is a prosumer, by the way.
I don't know. That's the word I made
themselves
up.
Like this.
They say they're targeted towards enthusiasts and business users. So but that's like, what I. That was my word
someone,
because I thought that was lamer than.
But my point is even all these targeted editions anyway, like, ooh, am I an enthusiast or just a regular? Like, I'm enthused about what I'm doing with my laptop, but I'm not sure if I'm enthused about the laptop itself. I would be more enthused if it had a metal. But so yeah, the Windows Mac OS 10 Mavericks is the enthusiast edition of Windows 8.1.
Well, so I wonder if Windows 8 has any of the capabilities of 8.1 that we're talking about, like the BYOC features for management. And that
nope.
Windows 8 Pro has the remote desktop connections, the ability to receive remote desktop connections. I'm reading from the Wikipedia page. It can join a domain. It has an encrypted file system. It's got client Hyper-V, and it can boot VHDs and, you know, has group policy and BitLocker and all of that stuff. So all the real features that anybody really should ever give a shit about start in Pro. So if Windows 8, if somebody just walks into Best Buy, buys Windows 8, a laptop with Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, and brings that to the office, it still doesn't really have the ability to do what we're talking about.
Wait, so Workplace Join, for example...
I don't know what do you know what version
what
or what
edition
that's in?
Yeah, yeah. Can someone check that? I don't have my phone here, and it's got an Android keyboard on it.
I don't know. The
can Windows space shift
and,
8.
Anyway, Gabe and I can continue this conversation while Brian types.
Wait, the autocomplete be uninstalled.
Have you? Jimmy Kimmel does this in when he has guests on. He pulls up the Google homepage and just starts typing in like he had is Brian Cranston, and then like to see what the other things, what the suggestions are. It's a fun game.
So it's like going to be single, Madden, gay, dead are probably the three things that would come up, right?
I'm curious why you're not using voice search.
You can do that. Oh, wait. Let me click the microphone. All right. Quiet on the set.
Pretty much, Alan Osborne. This is just a random stream
Windows
of consciousness
8.
Today.
No, shit. Wait. Start over.
So remember that.
Okay. It says, and Windows 8, no shit, it's over. That's what it turned it into.
All right, so we'll come back to that.
Wait, what edition of Windows 8.1 is Workplace Join in? Nailed it. Okay, edition of Windows 8.1 didn't work. Please join in.
Well, what do we have next on the document to talk about?
So Alan Osborne, who was just asking us if this is just tuning into our brainwaves, he asked if the EC2 instances running things like SQL and things like that are accessible as backend services within the Amazon Workspaces thing. And so this is the whole Amazon announcing their own DAS solution last week. To answer that, I read at least in one place, and I say this because it just goes to show I'm not making this up, that it does
because What if you're making up that and the statement about your, the fact you're not making that up?
No, because I'll find, I have the link. So I found the article. So, I did read in at least one place.
Gabenewth.com.
that yes, it does plug into the other EC2 stuff. So it is part of an overall infrastructure as a service option, which is, I think, the biggest deal about this whole Amazon DaaS solution. Because it, you know, at the end of the day, when we first read about it, Brian and I were like, all right, well, we got to test it. We got to get in there. And I'm like, wait, at the end of the day, we could get this whole thing set up, and all we're really going to be able to do is connect to a Windows desktop. And you're like, yep, it works. And then we'd be done. So we can see the management, but, you know, this is just managing stuff as well. So I think the biggest deal, the most disruptive aspect of this is that one of the bigger issues of DaaS right now is companies placing their trust in service providers, yep, that, you know, they're relatively unaware of. And, you know, so they don't know if this company is going to get shut down. What do I do if all my desktops are there? How do I handle, you know, how do I store this stuff? And what's my backup plan in case they go out of business or they get raided by the FBI or whatever? Amazon, a lot of companies have already decided to put their trust into Amazon for other backend services. And so this is just extending that and saying, you know what, Amazon already hosts all this other stuff. We've already come to terms with whatever that arrangement is. So why don't we just throw our desktops out there too? Especially since it's right next to my backend services now too. So I think that's the most disruptive thing about this Amazon DaaS thing, is that people are already using Amazon for other things. So it's just a logical extension rather than a complete mindset shift in the company.
I agree with that. And that's the one big disruptive thing. And the second thing is the fact that these are persistent desktops. And my belief, and the world can correct me on this, but I believe that most of the other desktops and, you know, DaaS type offerings in the world that are in the, you know, $35 per month range were not persistent. And they were doing different tricks about that. But the fact that you can add these to your own domain and pick, you know, there's multiple data centers for them. The small one is a processor and 4 gigs of RAM and 50 gigs persistent.
That's the small one.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's so many offerings that they can extend this to in the future. So, you know, we look at what they're doing with S3. We look at what they're, you know, I like the idea of maybe using S3 for file storage. Like right now, it's just synchronizing my docs with S3 just for backup purposes. But I like the idea. Well, actually, these already exist. Like they have little agent type things you can download. There's open source ones that basically let you synchronize a folder with S3 and then sync it back down to other locations. So, that's cool. I mean, yeah, there's just a lot of cool stuff. I like the idea of someone is asking about powering them down and saving money, only paying for them while they're on. In this case, since your storage is persistent, if you power them down, you need to have some other baseline. Like instead of paying $35 per month, maybe pay $15 a month plus, you know, 6 cents an hour or whatever, or 10 cents an hour, a little bit different model. But you got to have a baseline payment to cover your, you know, 50 gigs that's sitting, not, you know, the sitting there like ready for you to use. So I don't know. I like this a lot. Someone in the comments today of that article from yesterday, which did 4,000 views yesterday, so that's a big topic. Someone wrote, you know, I was saying like it's cool, and then for $15 a month more, you get Office and Trend AV, but you can put you can put your own Office in the, you know, if you have Office already, you don't have to pay $15 a month for Office from Amazon. Just install your own copy. And someone's like, you can't do that based on Microsoft's license agreement. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Seriously. Huh. So it's not only about service providers, you know, the whole shared hardware and all that kind of stuff. Your own copy, your own Office licenses must be installed on hardware that you own completely.
Interesting. And I bet you Amazon would be the one that's liable for that if they let other people install Office on there and not the customer.
Ooh, isn't that creepy now, right? So like Amazon has to be snooping inside of all of our VMs. And so
I'm not saying snooping. Yeah, it's not a tinfoil hat kind of a thing. It's just that Microsoft, like when it comes to enforcing that, Microsoft, if they wanted to, they could go after just about every company in the world and say you're not licensing Office correctly.
Why?
Because you technically have to have Office for each device, you know?
Why are they such assholes? I can't believe that. This makes me so angry. Like I just want to remove Office. I I did install Office on my Mac finally because I got enough coworkers to still send stuff in PowerPoint. And I'm just, I can't believe how, like,
a part of you died.
I wish I could join the MVP program just so I could quit again because of this Office thing.
So that'll be your 2014 is spent making nice with Microsoft just getting slammed them again in 2015.
The revenge breakup? Yeah, Scott, they're assholes because it pays. True words were never spoken. Yeah. So, but it's, you know, it's interesting because now, you know, you can't. So this goes back to that thing about DAS. And I was talking about, you know, if you want to build VDI. And I talked to Dan Cordingley, you know, Teradici's CEO. Oh, Jack and I both talked to him on Friday. And he was talking about, you know, one of the things with VDI that they're seeing is a lot of people are building sort of pilot VDI environments. And you might build, you know, 100, 500,000 users and like get up and running and, you know, see the value of it for the flexibility and yada, yada. And then you're like, oh, wow, this worked great. Now let's do the rest of our users. And like, oh, my God, I got to build it for 5,000 more users. It makes your head hurt. Whereas if you just use a DAS provider, just, you know, write them a check and off you go. And so, because I do believe, as I said again, you can't build VDI more securely with better performance and for less cost than someone like an Amazon can. And this gets into all those other things we talk about, like, you know, they're doing the open data center stuff, I'm sure, where they're having DC power to custom cool aisles and custom hardware. And probably if it is Teradici chips inside there, I'm sure they're not plugging Tera cards in there. They bought, you know, a truck full of 40 billion Teradici chips that they're like soldering on to the custom design motherboards that are going into these machines. If they're even using the chips, they may be doing all the software with custom Zen, you know, based stuff. And so the point is, you can't do it cheaper than that. And so to you know, Alan Osborne saying like screws CSPs, pardon me, Citrix solution providers, particularly Horal services too.
Cloud service, yeah. It's more broad than just Citrix.
Okay, so it's like MSPs, but for all cloud. Okay, up today, man, I'm 0-2 on acronyms. But that's a good point because if you're selling this, if you're reselling this, then the days of you buying a data center or buying some renting some colo space and building infrastructure to service your customers, those days are gone, man. It's kind of like, what value does a distributor add in today's world when all software is delivered, you know, online? So the distributor takes in other bits. The distributor now is handling sales, inside sales, financing, invoicing, you know, all reporting, all this kind of stuff. So I feel like CSPs and MSPs, the days of them actually literally buying hardware and reselling that hardware and running platforms, those days are gone. And if you want to be a CSP, maybe now you're the one who ties their cloud apps into their Windows apps, and you're the one who runs like the AppSense software inside their VMs, and you're the ones who are actually handling patching of the VMs and updating that kind of stuff. But you are not going to VMworld and reading about VMworld's cloud platform because you don't give a shit, because you're paying for that from, you know, so Amazon charges $35 a month per user, you charge another $10 a month per user to add on your management or whatever that is, and I feel like that's what you're doing. But you're not buying and building software anymore. This is interesting for Citrix too, because Citrix is the only, so if Microsoft's got Mahoro, VMware's got Desktone, Amazon's got Workspaces, what does Citrix have? They have software that they sell to people who are building and installing this themselves. And so that's weird. So it's like, if I want to use Citrix to enable my desktops in the cloud platform, I got to like buy servers now. Or I guess you go to like one of these bigger providers that are using that. But then it's, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Citrix does. This is interesting for them.
Article idea.
It's on the list.
It's interesting too to see the responses from like VMware and Citrix. You know, they all come out and say, oh, well, you know, we welcome them to the market. It's exciting. It validates our vision and so on. And then they're quick to, you know, the VMware was quick to slam them, saying, oh yeah, but we also run Windows 7, Windows 8. You know, there's not all DASs are created equal and things like that. And I just I don't know how much that matters.
Well, and the thing is, yeah, we also run Windows 7, Windows 8 if you build it yourself. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, VMware, so you're telling me I should be building it myself now?
Right.
It's like a trap.
I talked to someone too who was saying that I mentioned the whole fixed VDA and running server OS as your desktop OS to, you know, for cloud service providers and things like that, and he said that he brought up that there's still customers that are that have applications that won't run on server versions of an operating system, and I question how true that is, because I mean maybe there's some homegrown app that for some reason is tied to a specific edition of an OS, but I can't imagine too many applications these days, especially COTS ones, that won't work in server but will in Windows 8. Right, so I don't know why you need to have anything else.
It had to be. It would have to be an app that was specifically hard coded to not work. Right,
yeah, like, unless there's some dependent file like that exists.
I'm with you. I don't even believe that's it. I believe it would be something like Bloomberg Terminal, because they've been writing it the way they've been writing it for the past 30 years. Like
right,
the
if first OS thing, equals Windows 8, then
if OS equals
else
server.
Bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or even like server. Like, I'm sorry, you need the server version. That's $90,000. You know, like one of those kinds of things.
Right.
But it's, I'm with you. And which, by the way, makes it even more hilarious that Microsoft doesn't offer Windows 7 or Windows client OS's, desktop OS's via SPLA. Because really, what's the difference? Like, honestly, so it's like these loopholes in politics, you know? Like, so, okay, yes, they don't offer Windows 7 as SPLA, but we have this workaround that everyone does. And so who the F cares? Like, why does it even matter that they don't offer this? Because there's a workaround, which is fine. And
well, but so we have to be careful though, be careful what we're wishing for, because we want change and we want one very specific change that makes it better for everyone. But Microsoft could just say, oh, you're right. Those are very similar.
Oh, my. So you
Let's
know what I want?
Just strip that shit out of Windows Server and make it so that you can't skin it to make it look like Windows 8 or Windows 7. Yeah. And you won't be vigilant anymore. You'll just say, oh, we have to go buy a desktop OS now.
Yeah, and it will be a Mac. And so but the thing is, to be clear, not having Windows 7 in SPLA is not my biggest SPLA complaint. My biggest SPLA complaint is about the shared hardware thing. The fact that you are allowed to run, you know, one customer on the same hardware as other customers. Which, by the way, I don't know how Amazon deals with that also.
Well, that's not SPLA. If you're a service provider, you can do that. So running Windows Server, deploying single user terminal servers, you can spread that across hardware.
No, but I mean, you can have one hardware.
That's my understanding. As long as you're deploying an OS that you are providing under a SPLA. So the shared hardware thing comes into hand. The shared hardware thing comes into play when we're talking about deploying Windows 7 client OSs to our users. So we can't have company A and company B executing on the same piece of hardware.
If it's,
right.
If it's a customer's to bring their own license.
Exactly. So that that's why it's so frustrating, and that's why these providers, these DAS providers have now are switching or are continuing to just deliver single user terminal servers to people, because that's a SPLA license for them, and they can put that on, they can spread that out amongst compute hardware. That's the only way Amazon could do this too.
Yeah. So this is interesting you know, like I said, a big thing here, actually I wrote that down as a note, the transformation of CSPs, you know, like the CSPs are having to up their game. Like, yeah, they're not, it's like the same sort of industry consolidation we see in every other industry. Like, we're going to have, you know, the actual physical buildings that house servers, there's going to be like 10 of those. And every other provider is just adding value somewhere in the chain. And of course, those margins are going to be squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, and there's going to be more and more desire to get that value sort of spread to the edges, like towards, like to add more value into the actual hardware owners, like the Amazons, and to get more value that the actual end customer can do. And that's what we're seeing right now. So now anything you add on to Amazon today is going to be sort of that middle value, like who's installing AppSense and managing that and managing the Windows patches. But at some point, it's like, well, I'll do the, you know, AppSense will plug in so the customer can do it, and Windows patches will plug in so Amazon can do it. And, you know, where is the value for CSPs in there? I don't know.
Well, and perhaps that switches to a management focus with maybe you buy the desktops through them and they make sure that they've got X amount of desktops on Amazon, X amount of Rackspace, X amount with Desktone, and they, and there's your redundancy. So you're not just dependent upon one on one company's ability to host those desktops. I don't know. I'm throwing stuff on the wall here, but
I still can't believe that, you know, you can't make yours more reliable than Amazon anyway. And when Amazon does have outages, they're, you know, short times, even the longest is, you know, several hours. And come on, your VDI environment hasn't been down for several hours because of some.
Sure. Thing. But if you also have a failover or a backup at Rackspace and you can, and it just kind of seamlessly spills over to there while Amazon gets their shit together and then back to Amazon, there's value to that.
Yeah, I guess so. But then you got to have your data, and your data is in S3. So now S3 is a single point of failure. And if that fails, then you have another data provider and you're synchronizing. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Like this is true. You can make this all, you know, completely redundant and everything. But I sort of feel like no matter what you choose, it's way more reliable than what you had before. And so, who even cares?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
It'll still be interesting to see how it all shakes out because – I mean, and there's going to be companies that hate Amazon for one reason or another, too. So there will be other solutions out there. There'll be competition that, you know, will sort of dictate what we look at and how we cover it.
But you know what I thought about when I was writing this article on Amazon the other day was like, what are we doing? I mean, like, this whole industry, the people who are like the engine, the tinkerers, you know, like you and me, Gabe, like, what are we doing? Like, I'm going down to talk to
the prosumers.
You know, we go to Bryforum and we see all these storage providers. Like, I got my drives, I got software, I got SSD, I got a hybrid OS, I got whatever. And it's like, who gives a shit? I don't know. Does Amazon use you? Go talk to them. And I'm going down to NVIDIA. Do I care this afternoon? Like, yes, we need a GPU, but talk to Amazon. I don't know. Talk to Desktone. Talk to, like, that's for them, right? And I was even digging into, you know, like, oh man, does Amazon use Teradici hardware, or is it use software? Like, and like, who gives a shit? It just works.
So I'm really looking forward to the road shows that we're doing this year because I think we talked about this last time we did a show, but you know, we're going to add a fairly sizable DAS component to that just because it's going to be on the forefront of a lot of companies' desktop strategy discussions this year. I mean, with so much happening in the DAS space, it's moving from peripheral kind of sideband technology that we're aware of but not really considering to front and center. Wait, should we take a look at this kind of stuff? And so the best part of those roadshows for me is talking to the people who have actually taken all of the stuff in and then applied it to their environment to see if it fits, where it works, why it doesn't work, that sort of a thing. So I'm very, very anxious and excited to hear what actual companies think about doing this. Because we look at it from this level and we're like, yeah, why the hell wouldn't you do this? Like, this Amazon for the win, right?
Well, and to Scott's point, like, forget Amazon. I'm talking about, like, you know,
in general.
Yeah, once DAS is here, and once we recognize that the DAS providers can provide VDI, you know, more cheaply, more securely, more reliably than anyone can on premises, then that means the days of designing and building on premises VDI are over. So that means, like, my days of talking to anyone in this industry who's not a DAS provider are over, right? Like, what the hell do I care?
Well, and that's just it, though. So that's what we need to wait and see, and that's what Scott's suggesting, too. Like, you know, let's wait till it comes out, and let's wait till people actually get it on their
table. I'm not saying I'm quitting today.
Yeah.
And quitting's not the right word. It's just the evolution. Because, like, you know, it's like – it goes back to the whole car thing. Like, we were the tinkerers. You know, it's like if we were – like, I don't know. Like, who are the same people? It's like – so everything we do – you know, our website becomes like a nostalgia site for people who are like those cantankerous nuts who still like to tweedle their own VDIs.
That's what happens with old age, man.
But that's just like a wrench turning hobby. You know, that's like, it's like all this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, going back to the big switch, like we're like in the power industry and we could be talking about like, you need the 14 gauge copper and like, you want this kind of coding? Nah. When you're running your own generators, you want to do this. And it's like, yeah, I just flip the switch and pay a bill. And so, and granted, that might be like a year or two down the road or whatever. But
five or...
Yeah, but the point is like all this stuff, Briforum is not about, you know, server vendors and hard drive vendors and stuff, you know?
Scott says, and you guys will be switching to cloud-based desks for your desktop?
I have a cloud-based desktop. No, I challenge that. I have written this several times before.
Hang on, whoa. You're not using a DAS cloud-based desktop.
No, I don't
You're
need
using
that.
Using a Mac.
Yeah, but no, my point
that's
is.
That's his point.
But it's all that stuff, though, is, you know, when I rebuilt, so I had to rebuild my Mac a month or two ago. And so, yes, I still had to rebuild it, so some management, but I didn't have to back anything up. I went to the Apple App Store, click, 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 redone.
You're arguing a point that has not been brought to the table.
I'm saying
you are not using a DAS provided
desktop.
Hang
on, because the DAS provided desktops are for people who need legacy Win32 applications.
Again, though, you're not arguing a point that we're actually talking about right now. You're arguing some other point. It's some other soapbox.
But the
right
point
now,
is that he's
right now,
asking,
this conversation is about what enterprises should do, and you're saying that enterprises in the future are going to only be using cloud-based DAS-provided desktops rather than hosting their own.
That's what I'm not saying that. I'm saying that for the enterprises, for the percentage of their desktops that go VDI. So I'm still not arguing that VDI is right for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that for those who go to VDI, there's a point very soon when no one builds their own VDI anymore. They just pay for it as a service. So to Scott's point, it's a bad example because I'm not a VDI user.
Right.
But so the point is that but all these things. So, yes, we're still managing. We're still doing SCCM and managing traditional, you know, laptops and all that kind of stuff for the ones that are not VDI appropriate. But for all these vendors we talk to who have VDI products, the Nutanix and Atlantis and Simplivities and SanDisks and all these companies, you know, like, I don't care what they do because I'm not building my own VDI anymore at some point. I'm not saying this today. This is like in the next year, 2 years, whatever. I'm like, yeah, go knock an Amazon store. You got to sell yourself to them. So I still care about the Windows management. So like what we do with AppSense and Res and App virtualization and that kind of stuff, but the actual hardware infrastructure providers, the server makers, the storage makers, the, you know, the that kind of stuff, that I don't care about anymore starting, you know, next year or whatever, 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know if that's I don't see it happening that way. Again, I mean, you know, we haven't even seen this year of everybody being conscious of DAS and actually evaluating it in their organizations play out. So to call it this early and say in a year or two nobody's going to care about doing this stuff internally anymore, I think it's premature for that because we haven't even found out what the limitations are that actual real companies are finding.
Yeah. Well, and so I guess we'll find that out in the book also. So we can mention that – I guess I mentioned this in the article the other day is we're putting together a book about DAS for – I think we'll get this out pretty quick, like in the next, you know, I don't know, few months, first quarter next year. And we're talking to – DAS providers, we're talking to, you know, MSPs, we're talking to customers who've gone to DAS, customers who've tried DAS and failed at it, customers who've evaluated DAS and chosen not to go to DAS. We're talking about, we've got a whole list of questions we're trying to get answered, like including, hey, I go to DAS, but I still have laptops on my desk. And what now, how do I manage those? They're thin clients now? Wait, what about, we're going, like all these questions. So, you know, that'll be a big focus of ours, for this year. And for me, this is just an exploration simply because I want to know more about this and what's actually happening and all that kind of thing.
It's worth mentioning too, that these things that have happened in the last few months, they haven't fixed any of the problems that we're aware of coming from the DAS angle over the past, you know, 2 to 15 years, depending upon how you classify DAS. So none of the problems have been solved. It's just that DAS as a solution is now sort of front and center on our path.
Yeah, and
so there's still a lot of work to be done in order to make it a viable solution for many, many organizations.
Yeah, and to be clear, like I'm going to say it again, and I know this is a repeat. I'm not saying DAS is replacing desktops. I'm saying DAS is replacing on-premises VDI. So VDI will always be a subset of the form factors you use to deliver your Windows desktops and applications. I'm saying very soon, I believe, we're not building our own VDI to serve up these legacy Windows applications. We're paying for it for someone. Because I don't think we can do it more cheaply, more securely, more reliably and with better performance than what someone like a big provider can do, be it sure. Amazon, Desktone, or anyone else.
Right. Well, that's what you wrote about a few weeks ago with the, 500 users.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, did you realize that you wrote that before, like 2 years ago?
Really?
Almost the same article, except it was 1,000 users. So you're softening.
That's awesome. So a lot of times I Google for these articles that I write, which one has more views? Because frankly, if that's the case, I can write a little script, and like a find and replace, replace virtualization with cloud, and MetaFrame with Zen Desktop, that kind of thing, and then just sort of like recycle all the articles and kind of have it automatic.
I swear that the title on that first one was like, if you're deploying your own desktops for less than 1,000 users, you're an idiot.
That sounds
about right. Like that. Yeah.
I still can't believe, like, look at, yeah. And all these requirements and stuff, it's just, yeah. Well, you all know my thoughts on that.
I'm going to search for Brian Madden idiot and see what happens.
We don't have enough time.
Okay, so we have a few other things on this list here for today.
Yeah, go for it.
If you're going to segue us, Jack, you got to segue us, man.
Oh, well,
Jack.
Well, I saw, Gabe wrote about virtual bridges last week, and there's Extreme.io and Spoon on the list. So
we actually wrote New Mescent in the blog post about this, and it was just we got our application virtualization.
First of all, there's no we. This is me. Second of all, I don't know the difference between all these like second tier. Look, I know ThinApp and I know AtV, and yeah. There's like everyone else, and they all change their names as far as I can tell. So because it was like Endeavors, and then there's
and then they came up with Cloud Paging or something, which is just streaming from the web. But now they call it New Mescent. So
Endeavors was New Mescent,
right?
Spoon
was called Zenicode.
Zenicode
back
right.
in the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I looked back on this, and it was somewhere in the single digits, very early on in our Brian Madden TV era, sales. So early on in our Brian Madden TV era, we used to do these little segments where one of us, usually me, would call somebody and just record a phone conversation with them to learn about a product. And that was when we were introduced to Zenicode. And really haven't talked to them since then. And so I got an email recently and just I had a phone call with them. And I just learned that it's not just another application virtualization provider. I mean, they effectively that's what they do. But the way that they do it was interesting to me, where they actually stream down application-specific virtual machines and then leverage the host windows to run those. But what was interesting about that to me specifically was that in doing so, they can take those problematic applications from Windows XP and run those things in Windows 7 and Windows 8, even things that require UAC or IE6 or Java, that sort of a thing. So I'm working on an article that's not fleshed out yet, and I don't really have my thoughts all that organized on it. But sometime this week, I'll have an article up about Spoon that sort of explains what they're all about. And I just remember I called Brian. I had a day full of meetings last week, and one was Virtual Bridges, and the other was Spoon. And I called Brian. I'm like, both of these guys are doing stuff that's surprisingly cool. So Spoon is a real thing. They've come out with new stuff lately, and I'll have something up on the website later this week talking more in detail about them. Let's see what else is on that list, though.
I don't know. So. I didn't look at this. So Extreme.io was just released by EMC.
Yeah, I saw that it was released.
And I guess I didn't know they hadn't been released yet. Because weren't they this is the company who put the idea in my mind, which I will soon not care about, that there's you can do inline block level single instance storage. So this is the idea of you have your storage in the back end, and you can like P to V a bunch of persistent desktops, but it can actually, look at the individual blocks and sort of, collate them and not store duplicates and all this kind of stuff. And so you can have very fast performance, even for VDI, even with all fully persistent environment. And they were at Briarform, I think, in London like 3 years ago. And they're the ones who were in, quote-unquote, stealth mode at Briarform.
So they had a booth with a logo, and that was about it.
But they wouldn't tell you what they did. I'm like, y'all paid for this, you know?
What is this Extremio thing?
Yeah. So they're doing their thing, and EMC buys them, and we're all sad because we figure that EMC bought them to kill them, as it's threatening to EMC's business model. But whatever, it was fine because now there's 50 companies that have some kind of similar type offering. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of a funny little footnote. I saw a press release last week that EMC released Extremio, and I'm like, at first I thought it was from their clutches. you're free. We have sufficiently bogged you down for 3 years to where now what you do doesn't actually matter. So off you go.
I don't recall. I know we had calls with them before, before they were bought by EMC. I don't know what the actual solution was going to appear as, whether it was going to be
hardware,
going to purchase hardware, Flash. Or whether it was just a software. It was hardware back then too.
Yeah, it was. They were doing three things that made it work. all SSD, so that's very fast. Very fast processors, so they could spend enough time doing their advanced algorithms because they can't basically. That's a long story. And then the algorithms. So yeah, it was a hardware thing that was always going to be hardware.
And that's how it's been released as now with EMC. The most interesting part of this to me, at least, is that now we actually have a big name, big iron storage vendor doing the same thing that all these little guys with desktop virtualization specific solutions are doing. Because those, the big iron vendors were not on the list of people with desktop specific storage solutions before.
I'm laughing because you're like, it's hardware. EMC releases hardware. News at 11.
Yeah, so it's hardware.
Did I write my article called "I'm So Over Hardware Now"?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I need to write that one down. and I also have my one "I'm Over Convergence" too. Man, I'm
no, you have not written that. I've seen it on your list of things to write though. So
can't wait hardware. Ugh. I know you have to have hardware, fundamentally. But why should I buy hardware that's not just the massive quantity of the cheapest drives that I can buy and just put them all together and have smart software making it all work.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what all the ODC folks do.
So I wrote a few weeks ago, I think since the last one of these podcasts, that I thought that the storage optimization stuff had become a commodity in the space. And I caught flack from one guy on Twitter who said something like, cars aren't a commodity. Your Ford Escort and your Lamborghini are two different things with different features and everything. And I said, yeah, but gasoline is a commodity and you can still buy different levels of gasoline for different applications. So maybe I need 87 octane for a lower end application. I need 93 for a different. And that's the case with the storage stuff as well. I mean, it is the point of calling storage optimization a commodity is that it's literally available to everyone across the board. And while, yeah, there's some differences between them all, everyone has the ability to get it now. Down from if you're a Liquidware Labs profile Unity customer, you get their Flex IO storage optimization for free, or you can go now and buy this big iron from EMC that has the Extreme IO, functionality built into it. So it's across the board now. So this further validates my feeling that storage optimization has become a commodity. To use typical press release speak.
Because that's how I heard about the Amazon thing, actually, was from the VMware press release. Champ applauding. We encourage competition. We love it. Pricing be damned.
The other thing I have that's sort of my topic on this is the virtual bridges. We had virtual bridges on our Geek Week back in, believe it or not, 2009. So holy cow, that was almost 5 years ago now, because I think it was March of 2009, maybe February even. So almost 5 years ago, we had them on for version, 2 or 3 or something like that. And pretty much every contact we've had with virtual bridges after that time hinged around some sort of relationship, some sort of deal they'd struck with IBM. And that enough is... right, that it became more and more of an eye roll kind of thing as time went by, because, you know, it's IBM now leads with their managed desktop solution, or their desktop virtualization solution that you can, you know, you call up IBM and say, I need desktop virtualization. And then they say, oh, you need this SKU that was built on VirtualBridge's Verdi. And it just became sort of a, this must be an IBM only kind of thing. And evidently the board, or, you know, the powers that be within VirtualBridge sort of identified that aligning almost entirely with IBM was not the way to go. And so they replaced the CEO, they replaced the CTO, they basically did a complete executive sweep, and now have repositioned VirtualBridge as a more broad spectrum desktop virtualization solution. They're going to try to take it beyond just on-premises stuff, like a hybrid cloud solution that works with OpenStack and things like that. But the coolest thing that I think I got out of the phone call I had with them was that they were kind of soured on Spice, and I was so happy to hear that, because where Spice performed really well back when we first got introduced to it, which was 2008 maybe. Kumranet, does that sound about right?
Yeah, it was right before TechTarget bought us. So yeah, I think it was that summer.
So, and that was, I think, my first trip to San Francisco, was to go out there and meet with them and test Spice and things like that. At that time, Spice was great, but as time went by, PC over IP came into the market, and then HDX came about, and so we've got a way better graphics performance over any network connection with the more modern protocols than we do with Spice. And so they've realized that there's some limitations there. So they're working very hard to get Spice up to snuff, I guess, so to speak. But they're also kind of looking around at alternative things. And I don't know if that involves remote effects or what, but the idea here that we're hinging the entire thing on Spice because Spice is tied to KVM and we're built this whole thing on Linux is sort of fading away, which is really nice to hear. So they're
who are they selling to? Like who would buy VirtualBridge's products?
That's a good question, and I think that we're still fresh enough into this new executive team that they're still putting their finishing touches on the product. When they came in, they were about to release Verdi 7, and so they actually took it, they pulled it back and added a couple other features. Nothing crazy. They added some multi-tenancy features that, you know, just allow you to separate the workloads across hardware. It doesn't help anything with remoting Windows or anything like that. But from a hardware management, storage management standpoint, they've added multi-tenancy features. But there has yet to be a full release under the guidance of this new group. And so I think that when they come out here in the next, probably 4 to 6 months, we should get an idea of who they're actually targeting the solution for. There was no mention of Leaf or some of the other kind of more fringe things that they harped on before. Harped isn't the right word, but some of the things that they tried to drive home, I guess, before. I assume that still exists, but I don't really know. The Leaf was their client hypervisor, but still, the message coming out of VirtualBridge is much different than it used to be. They actually just had a talk with IBM early on after the shift and said, you know, we're gonna part ways with you guys. And I guess that ended halfway decent. IBM still offers a version of Verdi as their go-to desktop virtualization SKU. But they have since parted ways with IBM, and so they're focusing on a more independent strategy going forward.
Well, yeah. So I guess we wait for their products, and
It's nothing. Like you said, I'm more excited about them than I have been in years. But that's, you know, the comparison there is not
instead right. of a
it was
2.
At 0.01, and now it's at, you know,
on a scale of 1,000.
But what they're talking about in terms of taking that product that we thought was pretty cool back then, that has since seemed to be languishing, what they're talking about with it seems interesting. So anytime there's competition, that's good. I don't know if they're going to take over anything, but, you know, remains to be seen what this hybrid cloud solution looks like.
So speaking of IBM, so IBM bought FiberLink last week. Do we care?
This is – well, so it's taking one of the – you know, there was that question at the very beginning of the show. Hey, now it's just about everybody has their EMM solution built in. So this really leaves at this point the independent EMM players. There are more of them, but it's kind of like – and then there were two with being AirWatch and Mobile Iron. And there was, you know, there was like the line that that Brian, you were talking about, like IBM, the place where companies go to die. And
oh, that's not my line. That's widely held view in the industry.
Yeah. Well, so, but I was thinking that back at that and looking at recent acquisitions by EMM acquisitions. Symantec has been doing a lot, of course, with the new Kona and Odyssey acquisitions.
Wait, they've been doing a lot as in they've been acquiring a lot, or they've been actually doing a lot with these acquisitions?
Been Symantec, since they made these acquisitions a year and a half ago, there has been continued development and new features and such. Because we're
at the, any good?
You know, on paper, it looks like it checks all the boxes. And so we're at the point right now where in 2013 you definitely can't just buy an EMM solution and sit on it and not do anything with it, because it's all, like we always say, changing so fast, and because it's changing at the rate of client devices and client apps.
You know, I wonder. It's interesting now because we've got these EMM products from these big companies like Citrix and VMware and Symantec and Dell, and you know, and then we've got these sort of standalone ones. We've also got them from, you know, now IBM and Oracle probably has. Like, yeah. I mean,
I don't know if you saw that. So Oracle bought
Glaze over Oracle,
right?
Stuff.
Oracle bought a vendor called Bitzer Mobile, and Bitzer
really?
Mobile. That was on Friday. It's funny. Speaking of disappearing, you go to the Bitzer website. There is no Bitzer website anymore. Every single link redirects to a single page on Oracle's website that says like Oracle's Bitzer acquisition. Yeah.
Despite the cheating, we still run the sailboat race. So
in both of these cases, so IBM also had that – they had some MDM stuff from that Big Fix acquisition 10 years ago. 2010, 3 years ago.
Close enough.
Well,
is it now called Tivoli FiberLink Enterprise Mobile Device Management for iSeries?
No, the Tivoli
with
name
a lot of
is,
little plus signs all over. No,
the apparently that's HP. Apparently the Tivoli name is they're phasing that out.
Yeah,
but, so it's now IBM Endpoint Manager. But you figure with
the
all the
so slow, even phasing out the name took 10 years.
you figure they're talking about you know, a platform for developing mobile applications and all this other stuff. So you really need, on the end user device facing side, you need all the EMM bits and pieces to bring everything together. So it seems like that's what IBM is doing with FiberLink, and with getting FiberLink, they got, you know, one of the their FiberLink is in. They may not have had quite the profile of Mobile Iron and AirWatch, but they were up there and are they're fairly feature complete in terms of MAM components and MDM support. So IBM will have sort of all the bits and pieces to tie it stuff together. And Oracle, you see that Oracle has like dozens and dozens of front end client applications out there for iOS and Android. So to have all of the bits from Bitzer that would do the app-to-app communication, like it's all the secure MAM stuff that we talk about. So it makes sense that they have this.
So that one I can actually buy. Like that one I believe. that could help them.
Yeah, it's like we have like 30 mobile apps out there, and so we just need we need more EMM bits
to tie them all together. So see, I can get on board with that, but everything else, like, it's crazy because it feels like most customers are going to have relationships with so many different companies in this space. And so who do you decide manages your mobile phones? Do you use your Windows platform provider? Do you use your user experience provider? Do you use your security provider? Do you use your hardware vendor? Do you use your MSP?
Or you just go buy AirWatch or MobileIron.
Maybe that's where those guys are working out, because they're like, I'm...
Yeah. If you're like, do I want to get tied into my IBM MDM or...
Though if you're buying something from IBM, what? You're already like... You've caught that religion.
Yeah. But still, so people, of course, are going to be saying, oh, who's next, and will AirWatch or MobileIron get snatched up? And hey, somebody's got to remain the neutral party, right?
Ah, my naive brother. So let me ask you, who doesn't have EMM today? Microsoft?
Or do they kind of do? Well, they have.
They do, right? Or they think they do.
They think they do.
Intune?
Yeah. So, you know, Gabe and I were just talking about this before the show, how little we know about Intune and how little we can find on it.
Hey, we or you?
Well, we isn't Jack and I.
And anybody. Anybody
the industry, you mean we, like, the industry just doesn't have, yeah, there's not a lot of, yeah.
Yeah, so like, I want to know about we're running over right now. So, like, if I want to go read about a random MDM vendor that I've never heard of before, there are a few places. There's this website, Enterprise iOS, that has a bunch of stuff. It does not even mention Intune. Gartner, on its mobile device management analysis, does not even mention Intune. So
okay, so Microsoft doesn't have one. HP?
Right.
Do they have one? They're a software company now, right?
Correct.
So, all right, so Microsoft buys...
I know CA talks about
CA?
Mobility.
Do they have... They got to have something, too. They're like Symantec and Oracle, in my mind. Like, companies go there to, you know, go to jail.
I feel like CA just bought someone or two even.
Well, yes, in the MVM space.
But but Microsoft isn't ever going to get serious about delivering stuff to non-Windows clients, so they'll continue doing their thing with their Intune that doesn't
even qualify. So we just have to look at
the
list of biggest companies in the space, like biggest IT companies, biggest providers, you know?
That don't have anything and that...
Because, yeah, we've got HP... You know, we've got...
How much do you think AirWatch or MobileIron would cost now?
How much do they get invested?
AirWatch got $200 million in February.
So, yeah, so like, add up
That's
all the...
a lot of damn money.
Add up all the, you know, add up all those numbers together, like, of all the numbers of all the money that they took in, and then, like, triple that, and that's what they want.
Yeah, well, so that was their first round... I think that was their first round ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they'd been purely...
Does revenue factor in that situation when there's so much investment in there? Does revenue still factor into that?
Well, the thing
because
is...
Because, you know, you get the multipliers involved, but is that if you don't have a lot of debt or...
Well, they probably don't have, like, actual debt. I don't know.
Well, VC, funding, however you want to call it.
You call it shareholders who want money back.
yeah.
But the thing is, if you're buying companies, like, if you're looking at multiples of, like, if they still have their first kind of early on investors, like VC and that kind of stuff, those people want what they want. And revenue probably, you know, revenue's nice. But they're not going to – because, like, let's say if they're doing, you know, $50 million a year and they're trying to sell a company for $600 million, you know, you're not buying or not buying the company
based on
that. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't – the problem is it goes down to who needs it and how badly they need it, because there's plenty of examples of companies with, you know, negative run rates and no revenue being bought for – orders of magnitude above, you know, what investment they got taken in. So it's just one of those things that kind of just depends on the market, depends on the competition also, you know? So like if there truly are, I'm making this up completely, but like, let's say if there truly are, you know, like only one company left to buy them and two independent companies, well, it can be a pretty good deal.
Yeah. So, hey, before we get going, do you remember back in the early days of our careers, Brian, we had there was a managed desktops provider in Michigan. And every time I see FiberLink, I think of them. Do you remember them? Were they called FiberLink? Remember they were delivering Citrix MetaFrame desktops?
FutureLink. That was FutureLink.
FutureLink. Okay. That's what it was. Not in business anymore, according to the Google.
Yeah, they turned into like consulting. And hey, so, yeah. You know, there's one more thing I guess we'll just talk about real quick. Did you guys see this comment on the article from Amazon yesterday that there's this thing, Amazon App Stream, like the company that Semantic bought? It's another AWS service that was just announced yesterday, and it's for streaming. It's for remoting Windows apps, just single apps, and they're running on 2008 R2. But the idea is they're providing not clients directly, they're providing like an SDK, so you can stream the entire app or just part of the app. And the idea, and they talk about the benefits of it, like all the same benefits of classic server-based computing, device independence, performance independence, you know, security, that kind of stuff. Huh. And this is the idea that so you build your app for iOS or for Windows or client platform or whatever, and maybe like just one screen, maybe multiple screens. Maybe one area of the screen, maybe the whole thing, whatever's coming out of a data center. And they've got GPUs, so they're running on the G2 extra large instances, which are the ones using NVIDIA GPUs. But they're using this protocol they're calling SPX. They said it's a H.264-based encoding protocol, so it's not PCIe. But they do have this like API that allows you to send keystrokes and mouse stuff up, you know, back to the host. And the cost is 83 cents an hour. So so they must be using either something like terminal services or RDSH or something like you just have multiple instances of your app running, and each one is kind of like it's not a full user session on the server, but it's like there's multiple copies of the app. My point is 83 cents an hour has to include multiple users, because, you know, if you amortize out the Amazon workspaces, for example, that's only 4.7 cents an hour. Granted, you know, so there's no way, like, I mean, you can't pay 83 cents an hour for, frankly, the XR, the G2 XR instance on its own without the service is like 70 cents an hour. So, but if you have these things and you can run multiple copies of your app and you can run, you know, 100 copies of your app streaming itself down. So like I said,
it's interesting. The most boring explanation of what Mahoro is remote app from Azure. So, which would be just application streaming from Azure. And so I wonder if this is similar to that or preemptive strike sort of to combat that, but that sounds really expensive.
Well, it's got to be for a lot of users at that price. But what's interesting is, so this is targeted towards developers. Like you can't just go do this and like there's no client for it. Like there's an SDK and you build your clients for it. This is actually something that Kevin Goodman mentioned, you know, years ago. He's like, you know, if I'm Teradici, I start targeting, and Teradici since then has done this. I start targeting the developers of like medical applications and that kind of stuff. So instead of running your whole client and remoting down the pictures of the ultrasound or whatever, I mean, remoting the whole thing down, write an iOS version and the backend software remotes on the images, but the client widgets are like on the device or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is for something sort of like that. But there's a lot of talk. To your point about the preemptive strike against Mahoro, there's a lot of talk that Mahoro, as you said, may be something more like this, where it's not necessarily full-on Windows desktop in the cloud like a typical DAS provider. And if it's truly like an SDK for getting old-school Win32 apps, especially because now with Mahoro, you know, you've got less reason to use desktop mode on the latest Windows 8.1 clients, because any old-school non-Windows store, touch mode applications would come from something like Mahoro. Maybe this is something like that. But it's interesting. I didn't notice that at all. I actually read I read the description of AppStream when I was writing the article for yesterday. I just kind of glanced through it, and I thought it was just like a streaming, like video streaming thing. Like for
did Amazon buy AppStream?
Yeah, no, I thought it was like like media streaming for like you want to stream Briform sessions, mm-hmm. you use that. But I guess that makes sense because they already have that. So this is different than that.
The AppStream colors were the same as Amazon's colors.
That's true. So yeah, so that's interesting that Amazon's doing that. So I guess I'll have to. So I do still have that call. I got to send over. So Amazon works in a sort of a more old school way when it comes to press stuff. Like I got to submit questions ahead of time and all that. So I've not done that yet, but I'll get that put together later today based on the questions raised in this podcast, as well as the ones from the article yesterday. So we need to be sure to not delete these comments so I can have them. But anyway, so that's AppStream. So we'll see.
All right.
All right, and with that, I guess that's it.
Somebody gave a link to something about Intune.
Yeah, who's
some like deeply buried system, you know, like TechNet article.
what's our article schedule for this week? Do you got something for tomorrow, Jack?
So I have to write about this Celerox virtualized Android device that I had in my hands for a couple weeks ago.
All right, do you want to do that for tomorrow, Gabe?
He's got sure. Tomorrow. Are people still? We're still on the air, right?
I'm fine with that. Like, it's,
yeah.
Here's how we make the sausage, guys.
Yeah.
Makes no difference to me, Jack. If you got it and want to get it out tomorrow, that's great. Otherwise, I can put something up too.
If you have any feelings about what you would like to read in what order this week, you can comment in the chat room now.
It's okay. The Brian Katz approach, who goes onto Twitter and says, what should I write about?
Okay, so fine. I'm hearing you two guys are going to handle tomorrow and Thursday.
You got it.
And I'll do Friday then with one of these other things.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Let's spare the remaining three people from listening to us.
Podcast/company meeting over. All right. Well, hey, thank you all for listening today. And we will, this is, I don't know, chaotic, but interesting. So thank you. And yep. We'll talk to you some other time.